Welcome to Future of Freedom. I'm your host, Scott Bertram. Future of Freedom is a production of America's Talking Network. You can check out all of our great podcasts at americastalking.com. To support great podcasts like this one, please donate by clicking the link in the show description. We bring you interviews today from both sides of the debate over sanctuary city policies in various municipalities across the country. In a little bit, we'll be joined by David Beer, Associate Director of Immigration Studies for the Cato Institute. First, we're joined today by Jessica Vaughn. She is Director for Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies. You can find them at cis.org. Jessica, thanks so much for joining us.
I'm glad to be with you.
And talking today about the question, should conservatives oppose sanctuary city designations across the United States? Now, how we define sanctuary city sometimes can vary based on who's making the argument. Let's ask you, Jessica, how do you define the phrase sanctuary city?
Well, I keep track of all of the jurisdictions around the country that enact sanctuary policies, and the definition I use is any jurisdiction, whether it's a state or a city or a county, that deliberately enacts a policy or an ordinance or law that prohibits local officials from cooperating with federal immigration authorities or actively obstructs immigration enforcement is a sanctuary.
Now, you wrote a piece a while ago for National Review, and it takes on one of the big arguments that supporters of sanctuary cities put forward, and that is essentially this. If local law enforcement cooperates with federal immigration authorities, that immigrants, illegal immigrants living in those communities will avoid reporting crimes out of a fear of deportation or a fear that they will work with federal authorities. What do we know about that claim? What does the data show?
It's very interesting. That is the number one justification that local officials use to justify having a sanctuary policy, that immigrants will become so fearful of police, they won't report crimes, and that means there will be more criminals on the street, and so it interferes with policing. In my analysis, the real reason that jurisdictions actually have sanctuary policies is because they want to obstruct immigration enforcement, but this is the justification they've used to persuade police departments or sheriffs, or just to have a rationalization to tell the public about why they're implementing policies that shield criminal aliens. And as it turns out, though, that claim that immigrants don't report crimes if they're afraid of being turned over to immigration enforcement is not even true. And we learned this by examining the most authoritative source of crime victimization and crime reporting data, which is the Department of Justice. They do a survey every year of randomly selected households and ask them if they were victims of crimes, and if they were, if they reported it to the police, and if they didn't, why they did not report it. And what we found was surprising to many people was that immigrants, even illegal immigrants, are just as likely to report crimes to police as anybody else. And in fact, there are some subgroups of the immigrant population that are more likely to report crimes to the police. And so it shows that cooperation between local authorities and immigration authorities is not going to have this chilling effect that they claim is out there. So they're you know, that's not a legitimate reason to have a sanctuary policy at all. Immigrants are just as likely to report crimes as anyone else, and there are lots of reasons for that. And there's no reason for a police department to shun the Border Patrol or ICE because they're worried about a victim or a witness being deported for some reason. It simply is a myth that this is a legitimate problem in any communities. And we found that this was true in the places where there are lots of sanctuaries, like California, mm-hmm. and it was true in the places that are more notorious for more known for cooperating with ICE, places like Texas and Georgia and South Carolina. Immigrants in those places, even illegal immigrants, still report crimes as much as everyone else.
Jessica, do we know any numbers about how often it actually happens? Maybe there is a fear present that they could be deported if they cooperate, but how often or how frequently does that actually happen, in which we have someone reporting a crime who then ends up being taken out of the United States?
I have followed this for many years now, at least 15 years, and I cannot think of any case in which a victim or a witness who was not themselves a criminal who was wanted ever got removed from the country after reporting a crime. I can think of a couple instances where the people reporting the crime were actually drug dealers or wanted for other crimes, but you know, those are the notable exceptions. The fact is, victims and witnesses are never targets of immigration enforcement. That's just not the way it works. This is a notion that was really created out of thin air by the advocacy groups that don't want local authorities to cooperate with the feds on immigration. They want to protect people in the community from being deported. But the sad thing about that is that what ends up happening with sanctuary policies is the people who are protected are the criminal aliens who are actually preying mostly upon other immigrants in immigrant communities. So this is not something that is helpful to immigrants in any way whatsoever. People didn't move to the United States to have to live with the kinds of criminals that they left behind in their home country.
Talking with Jessica Vaughn, Director for Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies, on the topic of sanctuary city designations across the United States. There's an argument as well that local knows best, local control, local officials, local voters, in fact, to decide to put these leaders into positions of authority, know what's best for their individual communities, that taking something that might be federal, but making it able to be changed, amended by those with local authority is a better way of governing. Is that not the case in situations like this involving immigration?
I think it is best to have a lot of local autonomy and control, but I don't think that that is in conflict with the idea of cooperating with federal immigration authorities. For one thing, everyone should want that small fraction of the illegal immigrant population that has committed crimes and is preying on immigrants and others in the community should be removed and turned over. Immigrants themselves certainly don't want to live in crime-ridden communities, and certainly the victims of these crimes want to see justice, and part of that justice is having those criminals removed from the community. That's good for public safety. It's good for communities, and that's why in most places, cooperation with ICE is routine. And it's important to remember also that there's this narrative out there that paints immigration enforcement as overzealous and preying on people who mean no harm in the community, who are just here to work. In fact, immigration enforcement is almost entirely directed at that fraction of the illegal alien population that has been arrested for other crimes. They're not doing random street sweeps or scooping up people on their way to church or anything like that. They are targeting their efforts against the worst of the worst in the community. Personally, I think immigration enforcement ought to go a little beyond that to cover the workplace as well. But I don't think anybody can convincingly make the case that immigration enforcement is, you know, so sweeping and overzealous that it is causing fear in communities. The fear is being whipped up by the advocacy groups that want to contain ICE and really in reality don't want to see immigration enforcement at all, whether for political or for ideological reasons.
Do you worry at all that a successful push against sanctuary cities could harm other conservative causes? I think specifically about, we've heard more so in the last 12 months, 18 months, about Second Amendment sanctuary cities, in which cities are not cooperating or enforcing sometimes state or federal laws when it comes to guns and Second Amendment issues. Is that a concern as you work on this effort?
It's not really a concern of mine. And the reason is that the general public overwhelmingly wants to have cooperation between locals and the feds on immigration enforcement. We find that even in California, which has one of the worst sanctuary policies in the country and a fairly liberal electorate, and polling there found that 77% of the public, according to this poll conducted by the University of California at Berkeley, 77% of the respondents wanted to allow cooperation and was against sanctuary policies. So that's a pretty solid majority of the voting bloc in California. And I think that's true nationwide. It just doesn't make sense to protect people who are causing problems in our community, who are also in the country illegally, when those people can be removed rather than allowed to stay here to reoffend. And that is the result of sanctuary policies. This is what the public sees, mm-hmm. is that when there are sanctuary policies in place, then what happens is criminals are released back onto the streets and surprise, they offend again. And we've seen some efforts to overturn sanctuary policies, even in California, but the political pressure is simply too much and gets the better of common sense in a lot of these places, no matter what the voters think.
But are some voters and perhaps even some leaders only now seeing the results of those sanctuary city policies and the real limitations on resources and housing and food and the things that are needed in those communities to support policies like this?
Yeah, that's a really good point. We have seen that recently in the reactions of the mayors of some of the most notorious sanctuary cities, like Mayor Eric Adams in New York, Muriel Bowser, the mayor of Washington, D.C., the mayor of Philadelphia. They are all pitching a fit at the busing of illegal border crossers to their jurisdictions and talking about the burden of supporting these illegal migrants and how it is interfering with, you know, efforts to deal with homelessness and housing in their communities, and making the arguments that many other communities have been making all along about the impacts of illegal immigration. And yet, you know, the sanctuary policies that they also support are like a welcome mat for these illegal migrants. So they can really, they really played into the hands of the pro-enforcement states by affirming these arguments that illegal immigration is costly and a burden on the receiving community at a certain point, and we've crossed that point. So, I hope that this will help them revisit their sanctuary policies. But again, since the sanctuary policies are adopted primarily for political reasons, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily logical or going to be consistent with that when this migrant crisis is eventually resolved.
Jessica, for those who are fighting against sanctuary city designations across the United States, there have been some legislative maneuvers that have been deemed unacceptable, trying to defund some of these sanctuary cities from funding from state or federal entities has not necessarily gone through the legal system, and judges striking some of those things down. What are those levers that still are available to convince these sanctuary cities that they might want to change their policies?
Well, the most effective measures I've seen in recent years have been state laws that were passed to prevent sanctuary jurisdictions within the state's borders, like in Texas, now in Florida, South Carolina, and a few other states. The federal government also has attempted this with mixed success in trying to defund sanctuaries by prohibiting them from accessing certain law enforcement federal grants that are available. The Trump administration did this. And in fact, when they had this prohibition on sanctuary jurisdictions from getting federal law enforcement funding, a number of the sanctuary jurisdictions, like especially Miami-Dade County in Florida, actually reversed their policies. it never really was resolved in the courts. There were some conflicting decisions in different circuits, and the Supreme Court decided to dismiss the case once the Biden administration rescinded the Trump policies. I think this tactic to discourage sanctuary policies should be tried again at the federal level. You know, the federal government cannot force local governments to cooperate with it because that would be a violation of the 10th Amendment against commandeering. But they can penalize sanctuaries and try to create disincentives for them. It ought to be enough, you know, to discourage sanctuary policies when there are cases of criminal aliens who are released and then reoffend in some horrible way. If that's not enough to get sanctuaries to change their mind, then the defunding can also help. And at the very least, the federal government and taxpayers will not be subsidizing sanctuaries. There, you know, in 2021, there were about $300 million awarded to sanctuary jurisdictions from the Department of Justice. And that's a pretty big pot of money that, if denied to sanctuaries, might actually get them to revisit their policies.
Jessica Vaughn, Director for Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies. You can find them at cis.org. Jessica's on Twitter at @JessicaV_CIS. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today on The Future of Freedom.
Thank you very much.
Now to hear the argument from the other side of the issue, we hear from David Beer. He is Associate Director of Immigration Studies for the Cato Institute. You can find more at cato.org. That's cato.org. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Continuing our conversation today on the topic of should conservatives and libertarians, the right and center right, oppose sanctuary city policies across the United States? I want to ask definitionally first, when we talk about sanctuary cities, David, what do we mean in terms of what they do, what they don't do, what kind of cooperation they do allow, don't allow with federal authorities?
Look, there's a wide range of definitions. It is not something that's defined in law anywhere. You will hear everything from a city that doesn't engage in immigration enforcement actively, meaning they are not seeking out to arrest people who are in the country illegally, be defined as a sanctuary city, to at the other end of the extreme would be a city that refuses to have any communication whatsoever with immigration enforcement. You know, that's really the spectrum. I think there are several cities in California that have, San Francisco being the top of that list, that have attempted to wall off local police from immigration enforcement authorities entirely. And that's probably the farthest extreme. That's probably the clearest. Everyone agrees that that would be considered a sanctuary city. Mm-hmm. There's probably some more debate about whether a city that just doesn't have its police officers, you know, trying to arrest people specifically because they're in the country illegally would actually be considered a sanctuary city or not.
Sanctuary cities in various forms have been around for a while now. What do you think we've learned from the designations and consequences or lack thereof in these various cities?
Right. Initially, I think it was an effort to say we're not going to report someone who's in the country illegally just because they're in the country illegally. It was an effort largely led by members of law enforcement who said, look, we don't want to report everyone who's in the country illegally, who's in our city, because they may be working with us in some capacity on a criminal investigation. They might be a witness. We're trying to go into these communities to try to get murderers or rapists or whoever. And if they're all running away from the cops because they don't want to be deported, then that's going to make our jobs more difficult. And so at the one end of the spectrum, there's kind of a middle ground sanctuary approach of, we don't want to say, have everyone who's in one of these communities where there are a lot of people who are in the country illegally to just immediately run from the police, because that's going to make our job catching people who are criminals in those areas more difficult. And that's how it really started. Since then, it's kind of progressed to the point where even the people who we know are criminals should still not be necessarily turned over to the federal authorities for removal.
In describing sanctuary city policies, you mentioned, you know, there's some cities that are over here and some cities that are over here. There's a spectrum, but really on that entire spectrum is some level of allowing state, local police authorities discretion, autonomy on these matters, and perhaps, as we said, not cooperating with some requests from federal authorities. Are there other legal matters, matters of public safety, in which we give state, local police that kind of leeway?
Well, according to our Constitution and the Supreme Court, the federal government cannot enforce a state and local agency to do its bidding and say, I want you to go and arrest somebody, or I want you to report this information to me. That's contrary to the commandeering doctrine that says that state and local governments are sovereign and separate entities and cannot be commandeered by the federal government to just do whatever the federal government wants. So there is independence as a sort of basic principle of the, you know, our principles of government, right? And so that's the sort of fundamental basis from which to start a discussion of whether this should be allowed or not. I mean, it really, you don't have a choice at the federal level whether to allow it or not. The question is, how should we engage with these cities when approaching, grants and working with them in a law enforcement capacity? How should we try to get them to have the policy that is going to be in the best interest of their communities and the United States?
Are you concerned, or at least should advocates, or I should say, should critics of sanctuary city policies be concerned that success in fighting some of these policies would lead to defeats elsewhere for policy priorities for libertarians and conservatives?
Oh, absolutely. I think that if you're going to say, you know, the federal government is going to dictate policy to states and localities, you're not going to like a lot of what's coming out of D.C. And that's the big concern is, look, even if you disagree, San Francisco's got, you know, a pretty out there policy on this issue. Do you want the federal government to be able to just dictate policy to every locality, every state? That would really upend our government in a pretty substantial way. And one of the first cases that laid out the commandeering doctrine on this was about gun control and really forcing sheriffs to do background checks on people who are purchasing guns. And the outcome of that case was, no, you can't force localities to do the bidding of Congress or the executive branch. Mm-hmm. And that should concern proponents of federalism and limited government.
Some who oppose sanctuary cities, and this has been attempted and the courts have struck it down in various places, this idea of leverage, meaning do this or don't do that, or else we won't fund X or Y. Is that not already happening in other various policies, other various federal programs in which there are requirements that you must do X or you won't get the funding?
Right. Typically, though, the funding is attached to what the activity is. So if I want you to engage in immigration enforcement, I give you money and then you do the thing that I'm funding. So if I expand Medicaid, you have to provide health insurance to the, you know, the people in your state. If you don't spend the money that way, then the money gets pulled back, right? So with this, it's complicated because the grants are for law enforcement. They're intended to be used to really reduce violent and property crime and help states and localities investigate criminal matters in their areas. In this case, you'd be saying, okay, we're adding another mandate here. And there's no specific pot of money that's coming in order for you to engage in investigating someone's immigration status or, reporting them to the federal authorities. I should note, you know, it used to be the case under the Bush administration, really expanded under the Obama administration, this practice of federal authorities actually asking the states to detain people on the federal government's behalf. So they would send a request. They would say, you have to detain this person who we want until we have time to get there and pick them up. And that practice, it has been ruled to be unconstitutional because you cannot detain someone without a warrant, a criminal warrant or a warrant issued by a judge. And the practice that as it played out under the Obama administration was, we're just sending you a request and then you're detaining the person without probable cause that they committed a crime. So that practice was then eliminated, and that led to some, you know, discussion about, okay, so is every city now a sanctuary city? What's the meaning of this term? It used to be, if I'm unwilling to detain somebody, then I'm a sanctuary city. So now that practice is not possible. So it's really states saying, we're going to report to you. We arrested someone for some other reason. We know they're in the country illegally. We can report them to the federal authorities.
David Beers with us, Associate Director of Immigration Studies for the Cato Institute. I do want to ask about what we're seeing and what we have seen perhaps over the last 6 months or so inside some of these designated sanctuary cities, whether it be in New York City, where the mayor says we're full, we're closed, in Chicago, where they're having problems finding places to house these immigrants. In some cases, police stations are being used to house immigrants. And so we see stories like this from some of these locations that have been designated as sanctuary cities by their leaders. Is this a reflection, or is this an accurate picture of some of the problems that a sanctuary city designation can mean for these locales, that they become magnets and create a crisis in so many words?
Well, what's happening in New York specifically is New York has a policy where they say that anybody who doesn't have housing, it's a duty of the local government to provide them housing. And doesn't matter how long you've been there, doesn't matter if you're from New York, doesn't matter if you showed up last night, doesn't matter if you're a citizen or a non-citizen, doesn't matter. We have to provide you housing. And that is causing some serious financial concern for the city. I would not consider that has nothing to do with sanctuary status. That's just a policy that people have found out about. And of course, you know, you might think of it as abuse, but you know, if the state is out there waving, hey, we got beds and we're gonna put you up in a hotel when you get here, I mean, that's, yeah, of course that's gonna cause some real problems. I would note that the mayor of New York has said that the biggest reason for this this problem with people coming across the border is that they've shown up. Many of them are from Venezuela, you know, obviously fleeing the socialist disaster there, and they get here, but they have no right to work. So they have no ability to work legally in the United States, even though the federal authorities have released them because they said, well, we can't deport them. We don't have the planes or whatever the case is, whatever the reason was they were released. they were not given the authorization to then work, which in my opinion makes no sense. And so they don't have a legal way to support themselves while they are going through their court case and trying to prove their asylum case or whatever the case might be. Eventually they might be able to apply and get that, but that's going to be years down the road. And that's a real problem. And that's a federal problem when it comes to immigration policy, that we're releasing all these people, but then we're not saying that they have any way to support themselves. So it falls on states and localities. And it's not just New York. I mean, Texas is busing them to New York because they're dealing with the same problem mm-hmm. in Texas. So it is a problem. But I don't think it's related to the sanctuary status. It's really a nationwide issue. And, we're seeing it, pop up. I think the sanctuary cities, Chicago and New York, they're lobbying really hard because they think the Biden administration will bail them out
right.
from some of their policies, like the housing policy that really just obviously that's going to be a problem for you, for the city.
I did want to circle back and ask about the idea, the argument that in many cases, sanctuary cities have these policies because immigrants in the city become fearful of contacting police or cooperating with police on various matters and how it relates to crime in those areas. Is that largely anecdotal, or do we have any sort of hard evidence that sort of situation is occurring and affecting public safety in those areas?
So I would say that it's a theory. There are some evidence in terms of surveys, but it really does seem like immigrants do report crimes. And in many cases, even when it might, it might affect their immigration status. So I would say it's more at the theory level. And I think one of the reasons why it's not the situation that you might think is because many of these places already had police forces trained to deal with these types of problems. I would say on the other side of the spectrum, where you have cities that are actively engaged in immigration enforcement, that's when you can start to see a problem. So we've done some studies here at the Cato Institute looking at that issue. That's where you actually do see more of a shift away from engagement. Because if you have a policy that says a police officer has to arrest someone who's in the country illegally and work with authorities to turn them over to the federal government, then yes, that is an issue. So it's not an either or, it's kind of a middle ground answer on that. But on the whole, I would say the sanctuary policies are on a spectrum, like between total enforcement and, San Francisco, which is total non-enforcement, non-engagement.
David Beer, Associate Director of Immigration Studies for the Cato Institute. More at cato.org, cato.org. David, thank you so much for joining us here on Future of Freedom.
Of course, anytime.
We thank both of our guests on today's program, Jessica Vaughn, Director of Policy Studies at the Center for Immigration Studies. You can find more at cis.org. And David Beer, Associate Director of Immigration Studies at the Cato Institute, at cato.org, cato.org. For more episodes of the Future of Freedom podcast and other fine podcasts from America's Talking Network, check out americastalking.com or wherever you find your podcasts. Thank you for listening to Future of Freedom, presented by America's Talking Network.